On this week's show, all set for a potential title decider, we hear from Cray Valley PM boss Steve McGim.
We're going to play how we play. I'm sure they will play how they play. And at the end of the day, whoever wins deserves to win.
On the brink, but not quite there yet, Deal Town boss Steve King speaks after defeat to Tunbridge Wells.
I'm fuming at the minute because I've lost a game of football. And I don't like losing games of football, but ultimately, we're close.
And Wells boss Steve Ives gives his thoughts on his first season in charge at the Culverden.
As long as a few things kind of line off the pitch, I think the majority will stay, and hopefully we put a better account of ourselves in next season.
And is refereeing in crisis? No, it's in pretty good health, according to Nick Dunn.
I think people can see through some of the negativity that we see on social media or in the press, because officiating offers a little bit more than just what you see at face value.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Kent Only Podcast, sponsored by Sandwich Town Youth FC. We are well and truly at the business end of proceedings now. We've got four interviews for you this week, including a manager gearing up for a potentially season-defining clash and one whose side are on the brink of a history-making promotion. I'm John Phipps, who inadvertently went into the world's best-known fish and chip shop last week. Oh, now is a man who I'm sure cannot wait to see which of Ramsgate or Cray Valley will be lining up against his beloved next season. Matt Gerrard, have you got Isthmian League South East title fever?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it at the weekend, especially after the results this evening and things like that. Really, really looking forward to it. Is it Harry Ramsden's fish and chip shop?
No, none of that. I wouldn't walk into that place if I was being held at gunpoint. No, it's a place in Whitby. And we were in Whitby and we wanted some lunch and we walked past a few places and there was, and this place, I was just kind of drawn to this place. It's called the Magpie Cafe. And it's like one of the most famous fish and chip shops in the world. And we went in there before 12 o'clock and it was packed. People queuing up outside to get in. That's how famous it is. On a wet and miserable day on the Yorkshire coast and people are queuing up to get in and get their fish and chips before lunchtime. That's impressive.
Good value?
I mean, they knew how to charge, but, you know, it was really good tasting food, actually. I even treated myself and had a bread and butter so I could have a chip butty at the end. Now, that is opulent as far as I'm concerned.
Whitby is by the sea, isn't it? Whitby,
it yeah. is, yes. Yeah, so we did a bit of a tour. We went to Scarborough, which was beautiful, lovely place. And then we popped up on the coast, stopped off on Whitby for a couple of hours on the way up to see my friends in Darlington. So it was nice, exhausting, did a lot of driving. But yeah, found some nice eateries. And had a nice week. Did you enjoy your few days off?
Yeah, went to David Castle one day, then a walk in a muddy wood with the next day. Yeah, it was very, very enjoyable. Very, yeah, a nice break. I worked from home on Monday, so.
Oh, get you.
So all in all, it was a good week. It seems to be going fast. The kids are already moaning they have to go back to school on Monday, so it's been a quick week. But it was good. It was nice. Nice spending time with the family.
The kids are mine. I don't think the teachers are necessarily thrilled about the fact they've got to go back on Monday either, to be fair.
Well, I've been out watching the football this evening with a couple of teachers and they've said they're already in preparing lessons. So the rumours that they do get 2 weeks, not necessarily the case.
Absolutely. I had no opinion about teachers' holidays, but for the last 18 months, it's become very real to me just what these actually entail, and weekends as well. So any teachers that are out there, I know there's a few of them who listen to this show, apart from ones who work in private schools who never seem to be there, you know who you are. But, you know, I have the utmost respect for any teacher because it's long hours and bloody hard work. So fair play to them all. Anything else to report quickly?
No, nothing at all, really. Not watching the telly. Really enjoyed the football in the Champions League tonight. Some absolute quality goals, quality football. And just getting ready for the season now. For some of our sides, it's only 2 weeks left, isn't it? And some of them will be crying along with myself at the end of the season as well, I think. Some of them, unfortunately.
Yeah, very good about the Champions League. 33 goals in 5 games the Isthmian League South.
Yeah, tonight.
About your fancy Dan, your Phil Fodens, yada, yada. This is what you won the big bucks for. Unbelievable scenes. We'll talk about
somebody who turned down Dover got a hat-trick, and it's not Joe Taylor today.
Absolutely. We'll talk about that shortly, but in the meantime, it's our 292nd episode. And the year 292, or as it was known to those living in 292, the year of the consulship of Hannibalianus and Askenopiodotus, am I ever going to learn to make this script a bit simpler for myself, was, much like 2024, a leap year. Rough year for Yang Zhi, though, the Chinese empress of the Jin dynasty. She died, she was only 32. In another more modern news, Ramiro Alanis made his way into the Guinness Book of World Records for, in the space of 3 months, watching Spider-Man No Way Home 292 times at the cinema. A total of 720 hours, or if you prefer, 30 days. A third of his life for that three-month period watching the same film. And tragically, and I mean this in a different way than you may normally think I'd say tragically, that was actually him reclaiming the world record, having seen his previous best of 191 viewings of Avengers Endgame beaten in 2021. Can you imagine watching the same film 292 times?
No, I'm not a big fan of watching any film more than once.
292 times?
Is that a recent Spider-Man?
2022, I think it was. So I'm out of loop with my Spider-Man.
I'm not really. Yeah, I'm not into the Marvel stuff. So yeah, I can't see the point of that. No,
absolutely.
30, right. A month of your life, you know. I suppose some people have said I've watched a month of my life watching David this season, but you know, each to their own.
And you've also done 292 of these bloody podcasts. So what does that say about you?
Well, probably not. I haven't been in every single episode. You have, mate.
No, that's true. Yeah, I have.
Next season, probably beginning of September, will be 300 next year.
I'd imagine so, yeah. We might get another 4 or 5 out of it. It depends on playoffs and stuff like that, but we shall see how we go. Let's get on with the show then. We're going to start with a look ahead to a potentially pivotal game in the Eastern League Southeast, where top host second as Ramsgate take on Cray Valley PM. The Millers have won all 16 of their away games so far this season. They just lost the top spot this evening after Ramsgate won 6-2. At East Grinstead. The goal difference is very tight, though, and the Rams have now played a game more. So this makes this a huge old game on Saturday. And head of the game, Matt, spoke to the Millers boss, Steve McKim.
Yeah, it's great for people to see two teams going at it. It was free. Sittingbourne have dropped off in the last sort of 3 or 4 weeks, so they put up a massive fight as well, and it's still not over for them. And like I said, it's still going to be twists and turns with the next 2-3 weeks of the season left, however long it is. It's not stressful, it's exciting. I think it's both camps have done really well. We had to play catch up in the league because even though they went further than us in the FA Cup, every time we had an FA Cup game, we seemed to have a replay. So Ramsgate were playing league games in between and we weren't. And we found ourselves at one stage, I think it was something like 13, 14 points behind with 4 games in hand, and we managed to claw that back to be just a couple of points behind. And over the last month, we've managed to sort of like take top spot. And like I say, it's an exciting time for our club. We achieved what we'd come in to do first of all, which was reach playoffs, and now we've got another goal that we've set ourselves to try and win the league.
Now, when you came in, I was going to ask that next question. What did you look at the squad? Look at the players you could bring in. Did you expect to have such a successful season?
You always want to have a successful season. You always believe you can have a successful season. But then when it comes to injuries and suspensions and stuff like that, the tide can go against you. We knew we were bringing in some good players. We knew that we already had some good players from last year. And the club's remit was to go one better than they did last year, which is to get inside the playoffs, which they didn't. And like I say, the boys' form's been phenomenal. They've done really well, including the cup run. And they never know when they're beat, and they just keep fighting and fighting. And hats off to them because they've done extremely well.
Yeah, I think your form. I think you've won 6-7 on the spin after you losing to Three Bridges. Some people would have said, "Oh, that conceding those 2 late goals that could have derailed you." That must show you the character of the squad, who've just bounced back brilliantly after that.
100%. I'd say the players have been brilliant in training, in games, and they've put themselves in a situation where, if they continue to do what they've been doing, they could win the league. Now, we've got 4 tough games ahead of us, starting with Saturday. And I maintain, and people say it's cliches, which from the outside, as you alluded to earlier, they do call them cliches. But I look at it, you can only take the next game that's in front of you. And we've done that every single game we've played. And like I say, now it's come to the Ramsgate game. It's no different in our preparation. It's no different in the magnitude of the game as we played against Burgess Hill on Saturday. Every game we want to win. And if we don't win, we've then got to find out reasons why we didn't and how we can rectify them going into the next game.
One of the
amazing achievements this season that so far you've won every single away game. I read somewhere on The Guardian, somebody actually asked the question, has a team ever won every single away game, and pointing at your record. Can you pinpoint your away form, how good it's been? Because, of course, you drew at Charlton as well.
Yeah, no, we've been... The boys have done everything right. You know, if I look at some of the home games we've drawn, you know, three of them, we've been down to 10 men, Sittingbourne, Ramsgate and Broadbridge Heath. And they've managed to dig a draw out of that, you know. And at Sittingbourne, we had 10 men for 60 minutes. So these boys do utmost for each other to make sure they don't lose. And like I say, we've gone away from home and we've set up no different, played no different. I think it's more when teams come to us, they set up a little bit different. Which, like, if you've got a way of playing, sometimes you want to sit a bit defensive. Sometimes you want to attack when you're at home. We go the same way every time we play. And like I say, so far it's gone well for us. And we want to try and maintain that. We're not changing anything. If I let any secrets out, I'll let them out. We're changing nothing when we go to Ramsgate. We're going to play how we play. I'm sure they will play how they play. And at the end of the day, whoever wins deserves to win.
What do you expect from Ramsgate? I say there's going to be a big crowd there. They're hoping for 2,000. What do you expect from them?
Well, they've done equally as good as what we've done. You know, let's get it right. They've gone one stage further in the FA Cup than us. I think we went one stage further in the FA Trophy than them. And we're fighting out for the league. So both teams have had remarkable seasons. Any other year, the league's won by now. I think last year Chatham won it on 78 or 79 points, so the league would be won. We still got four games to play, so when you look at it, they've done brilliant. Ben's done well there with the squad he's got. His squad have worked hard for him and his staff and produced memorable moments this season, and we're both fighting out to produce one more memorable moment, and that's on April 27th to see who wins the league.
You personally, how much have you enjoyed this season?
I've loved it. The people I'm working for are brilliant. They help you. They don't interfere. They're really good people. And as I said before, it was like my first time when I started at Tonbridge. It was really, really good. This might change as they get bigger and want to move on and do different things. I don't know. But at this moment in time, they're nice people to work for. They don't get above their station. They want to be successful, but I think they want to do it in steps rather than yards. And that's music to my ears because, as everything says, Rome weren't built in a day. And this club has got potential. The ground itself, it's got a lot of potential to build on if needed. And if they did want to do that, I'm sure they could. Everything's good for this club at the moment, and me and my staff and the players are all enjoying the ride at the moment.
Final question, Is this the biggest game you as a manager have had? I know you've been in the game a long time, but as a manager, would you say the importance of it, is it the biggest game?
No, well, it's important, every game's important to win, Matt, but I look at it, we've got four games left, so anything could happen Saturday and anything could happen the following Saturday. You know, they're playing tonight against East Grinstead. Anything could happen then. So until April 27th, when everything's mathematically clear and crystal who's won the league, if it's before that, great. But if it goes to the last game, like it did when I was at Gravesend, we beat Canvey to the league by winning our last game and they lost their last game. So there's been so many good moments in my football career as a player and a manager and a coach that I don't pinpoint one as the most significant or the most important. Every game I go out to do is important, and my staff and my players, because you never know if it's your last. So I always, that's my outlook on games. I don't put no pressure on anyone because, end of the day, it's a game of football. And yes, we want to win. We want to make the fans happy, the club happy, the board happy. Everyone associated with Cray Valley, we want to make happy. Ramsgate want to do the same. When you start putting significance onto a certain game, that's when mistakes happen. That's when the pressure comes. Certain players can handle it, certain can't. So as I say, cliche or not, it's another game of football. And then if it goes our way, great. If it doesn't, we dust ourselves down and we go again for Herne Bay, which is the next important game.
Well, he's loving it. And how can you blame him? 16 away games, 16 wins. If they can make it 17, then I would imagine that the title is very, very much in their hands, isn't it?
Well, interestingly now, Ramsgate winning by 4 clear goals, they've gone top of the table. We know Cray have got a game in hand. Does that give Ramsgate a little bit of it, impetus going into the game? They're top of the table. If Ramsgate win, Cray have got the game in hand. I'm thinking this could go all the way to goal difference. Ramsgate have scored 99 goals now, I see. So it should be an absolute cracker. I know they're hoping to get over 2,000 there. What a title race this has been. They've been trading blows probably for the last 2 months, haven't they? Winning. Cray, one defeat all season. Probably take a draw, wouldn't they? Thinking, particularly what Ramsgate have got left to play as well. Could be a really exciting game. I presume you're looking at the paper. Ramsgate know they've got to win it. Cray could probably take a draw, couldn't they?
I think so, yeah. And I think you made the good point there. A listener, James, got in touch and said, you know, look at Ramsgate's remaining fixtures. They've still got to go to Chichester, banging form. And they've still got to play Three Bridges as well on the final day of the season. So even if Ramsgate do win on Saturday, I think that they can, that there's still a chance for Cray Valley. And I guess that's the advantage that Steve McKim has got his side into. But with their phenomenal form and, you know, great talker, a great manager, a great bloke. And I thought he spoke really well there.
Yeah, he's a very focused individual, because if this was me, you'd be thinking, wow, what a game. But clearly he's going to put his players, take the pressure off them, say it's just another game. We've done a job this season, won every single away game. All we've got to do is just play to our strengths and see how it goes. They drew with each other in the previous game. Clearly their best two sides in the league. Score goals for fun. It should be an absolute cracker. For me, John, the biggest league game we've had in Kent on League Pod all season, isn't it? Come down to this. 2 weeks to go to the end of the season. It's
huge. It's
winner massive. Takes all. Winner takes all.
Well, as I say, not quite, but it certainly would be a big thing. And also, I think, you know, for Cray Valley, if they were to lose, then they've got to bounce back from that. And that's certainly. Yeah. And one thing that I do want to pick up that Steve McKim said in there was he said about how many points Chatham got last season. I was waiting for you, I had a quick look through the other leagues at this step. And there's only one team that I found with more points than either Ramsgate or Cray Valley, and that's someone who's got 91 somewhere. I think it's in the issue in South Central, maybe. But there were teams top of their divisions at this level of football, a few fewer games in their divisions. There's a team with 59 points top of their league. R2 have 85. It's absolutely insane how relentless they've both been. You know, they've just both been phenomenal. And, you know, it's a shame there's not two automatic promotion places, of course. And it would be a shame for whichever one doesn't go on to win the league if they don't win the playoffs. But then that's the beauty of the playoffs, as well Ramsgate can attest to after last year.
Yeah, I think we all thought that Ramsgate would be the side to beat this season. But I think you have to give credit to Cray Valley. It's a job Steve McKim's come in. I think it hurt him the last couple of jobs. The Tunbridge, he left there a couple of seasons ago. Carl Shorten, the last of the year. But he's gone in there, got some really good upcoming players. And they've been an absolute juggernaut. One defeat in 34 games. Brilliant. Drew at Charlton. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. I really am looking forward to it. Ramsgate could score. Are we expecting a goal fest? I don't know. I don't really know how you're going to say it. I presume Ramsgate will come out of the block. Steve McKim will just keep his side on an even keel. So it should be an absolute cracker. And it's a privilege for me to be there on Saturday.
Well, Cray Valley's only defeat obviously was by 5-4. Ramsgate scored 6 tonight. If ever seen the game's going to finish 0-0, that's it on Saturday, isn't it?
It will be interesting to see. I presume that Ramsgate must have scored in every game this season. Yeah, you would have thought. Well, they both got the best defences in the league as well, haven't they? Well, Ramsgate conceded a few more, but it should be. It's the best defence against the best attack, isn't it? So we'll see how it goes. But phenomenal. So they've scored 190 goals between them. Brilliant. In 69 games. So
Ramsgate nil, Craig Valley nil.
Yeah. But again, could be like a chess match. So interesting how they both sides go for it in the first, how they look at the game and how they play for it tactically wise. Because, you know, Ramsgate think we win this, play a win 2-0, the goal difference will, of course, increase for either side. And that puts Craig back on pressure with their game in hand coming up on the final week of the season. So, yeah, really exciting times ahead. And it should be an absolute cracker. I'm really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. We look forward to hearing your thoughts on it next week on the show. Tonight, there's been five games, as I say, 33 goals. It was Beckenham 4, Sheffield United 2. Brilliant week for Beckenham. We've won both their games and are now just 4 points from safety. And on Saturday, Matt, they play the team directly above them. That is a 6-pointer and a half. For Beckenham, who Louis Theofanis is back on the scene all of a sudden. He scored, I think he scored a hat-trick on Saturday, and he's got two more tonight in their 4-2 win over Sheppey. Great week for them. East Grinstead, as we heard, was the destination for Ramsgate. 6-2 win for the Rams. It finished Horndean 4, Phoenix Sports 4, Littlehampton 1, Sittingbourne 1, and a really quiet one at Three Bridges as it finished Three Bridges 8, Hythe Town 3. Hythe with the team beaten by Beckenham on Saturday. Steve Watt pretty much tore into the players after the game on Saturday and then said, I'm actually going to go now. Funny Collins took charge with Alex Fisher on Tuesday night. And well, it didn't pan out too well for them with that 8-3 defeat. Noel Leighton with a hat-trick. There was a hat-trick for Bradley Schaefer as well, but I'm sure it's not one he will want to remember. And Hythe, you know, we talk about momentum. They've got to buck up because you want to have something to take in. You're going to have a new manager next season. Something to hit the ground running with.
Yeah, 5-0 down at half time. Showed a bit of good. Bradley Schaefer scored a quick fire hat trick. Yeah, disappointing for Hythe. Steve Watt, I think he's done a really good job there. The wheels have come off a little bit, conceding a lot of goals, isn't it? I think that's 16 in their last three. So,
not the best.
No. And when I've seen them, they've been very well organised, very well drilled. So, yeah, shame for Hythe because I think under Steve Watt, they had a decent manager who could build with it, but I think, you know, unfortunately the problems with their pitch has come back and bit them on the backside really. So but they'll look to grow and see how they go next season. But I would have thought there'll be quite a bit of turnaround of players there.
It's probably a fair assumption. On Saturday, Beckenham moved off the bottom with a 5-2 win over Hythe, while Everton Belvedere replaced Beckenham at the foot of the standings as they lost 6-1 at Chichester. Crow Valley beat Burgess Hill 5-0. Herne Bay won 2-0 at Littlehampton. Seven Oaks lost 5-0 at Merston. Ramsgate 2-0 winners at Phoenix Sports. Sheffield United beat Ashford 5-1. Sittingbourne were beaten 3-0 at Three Bridges. Sheppey heads to face Horndean on Thursday night, and the game's being played at Havant Waterlooville. Before on Saturday, as we've already discussed, it's Ramsgate against Cray Valley PM. Ashford host Chichester. Beckenham go to East Grinstead. It's Herne Bay against Sheppey. Hythe host Phoenix Sports. Seven Oaks take on Littlehampton. Sittingbourne against Lancing. Erith and Belvedere then host Three Bridges on Sunday. For on Tuesday, it's Burgess Hill against Sheffield United, Horndean against Ashford. That one's been played at Chichester. Hythe against Sittingbourne and Littlehampton against Erith and Belvedere. In the Isthmian Premier League, Chatham's faint hopes of nicking the title came to an end as they lost at Hornchurch, meaning the Urchins can return to the National League South. But the Chats can secure their playoff spot this weekend. At the other end of the table, Margate gave themselves a little bit more hope of staying up with a 3-1 win at Kingstonian. But the side in their sights, Chesson thumped Lewis 4-0 to say 6 points in front with four games left to play for both. Gate play the first of those four on Thursday night at Haringey Borough, which is the new venue for their trip to Potter's Bar, before they host the champions and boss Mark Stimson's former club to boot on Saturday. Folkestone beat Horsham 3-1 on Saturday after Cray Wanderers had lost at home to Hashtag by the same score on Friday night. Cray Wanderers were in action against the aforementioned Isthmian League champions, Hornchurch, on Tuesday night, and they lost that one by 2-0. That's those other games. See, Chatham host Folkestone, and Cray Wanderers go to Horsham before on Tuesday. Folkestone are at home to Concord Rangers. And then on Wednesday, there's a small matter of the Velocity Cup final, which is Chatham against Hashtag United, 7:30 kickoff, and that one's being played at Averley, just over the other side of the bridge. Let's head now to the scaffold, where a win for Deal on Saturday at Tommy George would have put them within a point of securing the title. But for a largely scrappy affair on a heavy pitch at the Culverden, the Hoops went down to a 1-0 defeat to a Wells side who've got even more games left to play than they've got. The Hoops then followed that up with a 2-2 draw at Lordswood on Tuesday night, pegged back very late on. But it does now mean that if they win their game on Saturday against Lidtown, they will be the champions of the Southern Counties. So it could be taken out of their hands on Wednesday night if Corinthian were to slip up against Rostal. But Deal now know that a win on Saturday will be enough for them to clinch the title. Steve King was pretty frustrated after the defeat on Saturday, as you're about to hear, because I spoke to him after their 1-0 loss at Tunbridge Wells.
Yeah, I thought we had pretty good control of the game. Our patterns were good, but you can see we've played so much football. I mean, we had to play Saturday, Monday, Wednesday, difficult big games, heavy pitches, and we just looked leggy today on, I've got to say, what is a horrific pitch. I mean, it's the same for both sides. I know Tunbridge Wells was frustrated as anybody having to play on it. They've still got another 6 games to play on it, but it was really difficult to dribble, it was difficult to cross, and it was, I think it was always going to be decided by a scrappy goal. It had 1-0 scrappy goal written all over it. We was hoping that it would drop for us, but fair play to them. Look, they've worked hard, they've kept going, and we got to take our medicine today. Disappointing, but we'll accept it and we'll move on.
Well, you've obviously been in great form, and I guess is this a point where you've played a lot of games of football and momentum can only take you so far?
Yeah, look, we've got a lot of injuries and we've got a lot of tired legs, but that's football, do you know what I mean? We had good cup runs, we had a good Vars run. You know when that happens that there's going to be a consequence to that. I think to have won 7 games on the bounce coming out of the Vars win was unbelievable. We've got players out there that shouldn't really be playing, but we haven't got much choice, and I can't fault their effort, I can't fault their commitment. It just looked an effort too far for us today, do you know what I mean?
I can't remember if this was an on the record or an off the record conversation, but today shows why it's handy that when we spoke before, that you could afford a couple of slip ups along the way.
Yeah, look, I'm quite happy to say it publicly now, because it's situation. We've had the number 86 on our mind since about December. That was a number that we thought would win the league. We now know after the other results today we need 86 points. Now, we've worked to that target since November, so nothing's changed for us. We need to get 4 more points. We've got 6 games to do it in, and that's what we've got to try and do. But for us as a group, nothing's changed, and obviously with the results elsewhere today, we haven't lost out, we haven't lost anything. So we've got to try and find those 4 points, hopefully as soon as we can. But I thought we played quite well today. Do you know what I mean? I thought we looked the better side in terms of control of the game. We just weren't good enough in the attacking third. We didn't take a chance, especially first half, and I thought we had quite a few. But if we play like that for the next 6 games, a little bit fresher, slightly better pitches, I'd expect us to get 4 points.
That's the thing, is that you now know it is 4 more points, and you know you could do it at the weekend, but you've got opportunities to do this, and it's just going to be a matter of just getting over the line. But I suppose any manager's going to say those last few were always the hardest ones to get hold of.
Yeah, well, look at Eric from Belvedere last year. Do you know what I mean? I like my darts and stuff like that. Everyone knows the last double to win a game. Do you know what I mean? To win a match. Do you know what I mean? The top players in the world can struggle. So, but we've said that for the last few weeks, and we've just kept winning and winning and winning. I don't think that it was anything mentality-wise today. I think it was a nip-and-tuck game. They've had some good results at home recently, do you know what I mean? And it just didn't fall our way. We've had chances, one falls our way, we win 1-0 off somebody's backside, and everyone's going, slogged out, a great away win, and it just went the other way. So there's no panic or there's no worry. I was happy with the performance. Thought we moved the ball well on a really tricky surface. We had good control of the game. We'll go to Lordswood on Tuesday. We know they're tough. They gave us a really good game on Wednesday night. The young side, a lot of pace, a lot of energy. So we'll go there, and if we can pick up 3 points, and we know it's 1. If we can pick up 1, then we know it's 3. And so, I mean, like, that's... anybody who knows me knows I've not got carried away at all at any point. I won't now, but I also won't get down in the dumps and down in the doldrums at this point either. We know what we're working to, and our aim's to get there.
I suppose it would be nice if you can do it at home as well. I know you don't want to think that far ahead, but that would be a great thing to do, wouldn't it? Because the crowds you've been getting this season have been brilliant.
Yeah. Look, I think when you're in a 40 game slog, you don't care where you do it. Do you know what I mean? You do it not playing, you do whatever, because you put so much effort in that it's not like a cup where you want that big day. You just want to be able to sit there and know it's done. But obviously, we've got 2 home games coming up after Tuesday night. So if we can get a result on Tuesday, it gives us two shots at home to try and do it. And yeah, look, if we could have a big crowd at home, but trust me, I'd have loved to have won today and won on Tuesday and had it done, trust me.
Today does show, doesn't it, that there's no easy games in this division, and it remains such a strong level league at this level of football.
Yeah, I don't think in some quarters we've possibly got enough credit for the run we've been on. We had 2 points after four league games, and this is only our second defeat in however many it is, 36, that must be, or no, not 36, sorry, like 32 league games, I think, two defeats, and every game's tough in this league. You see, like, Welling going to Glebe the other week, and look at Faversham. I think when Tommy Warrilow come in, he said, do you know what I mean, every game's tough. So we're not surprised. I think I've won once here in about 8 years, do you know what I mean? So no one needs to tell me how difficult Tunbridge Wells away is. And we haven't disrespected any opposition. We haven't disrespected Tunbridge Wells today. We prepared exactly as we always do. We've put players out there we probably shouldn't have put out, giving them full respect, do you know what I mean, to try and put our best players on the pitch. And we know the next six are going to be really tough. But what we do know is we're good at bouncing back. When we have disappointment, we often come and sort of like correct it. And we've had a disappointment today, and we'll look to go and correct it on Tuesday.
That's just the challenge, isn't it? Now, you've shown, as you said, you came out of the bars and you've been on a great winning run, and now you've just got to do that again, and then, you know, all your dreams have come true.
Yeah, yeah, like, it's just, I'm fuming at the minute because I've lost a game of football, and I don't like losing games of football, whatever the situation is. But ultimately, we're close. Like I say, with the Faversham win today, it's basically left its status quo in terms of ourselves and Corinthian. So we haven't lost out today. We've got to just keep going, and I think the moment we do get over the line, it might sink in then. But as the boys have said to me, even if we do get over the line, then I won't ease off because I don't like losing games of football. So we'll go all the way to the end of the season, and I think we can still get 100 points if we win every game. Six games left, there's 18 points available, so that'll still be our target. See if we can do that. But we respect everybody and we know how tough it'll be, but we're reasonably close.
Well, you said there, Matt, that those last points are the hardest ones to get. That final checkout is always the toughest one. They're so close now, and they've got two home games this week. They've got Lydd and then they've got Punjab. Surely it's going to be done this week, isn't it?
You would have thought so. You know, tough couple of games. Lydd can still get in the playoffs. Well, it's going to be.
And obviously, they've got the history with Punjab after last year's Kent Senior Trophy final as well.
Yeah, so, well, it's going to be tough for Lydd to get in the playoffs, probably saying it from there. Yeah, again, I think Steve King will be disappointed they conceded late against an improving Lordswood side this week. But again, as you said to him, if you're giving him five games to get 3 points at the start of the season, he'd have taken your hand off. So, yeah, fantastic achievement for them. You saw them on Saturday, did they look nervy? It was just one of those, you know, both managers were pretty critical of the playing surface.
Yeah, it was a pretty poor surface, so it was hard for both teams to get any action. And Tom Chapman, in particular on the wing, didn't really have a lot of the ball, and the deal weren't quite at full strength. And as he said there, you know, I've got a lot of players who shouldn't be playing at the moment because they're basically out on their feet. But he just wants to get them over the line. Obviously, his dream of 100 points is over now, but he's still wants to finish the game with as many wins as he can. I thought it was a scrappy game. I thought Deal probably shaded the first half, but the better of the chances were definitely for Tunbridge Wells. I had a couple of really good opportunities. But in the end, it was a bit of a ricket at the back, which proved decisive, giving Tunbridge Wells the win. But, you know, Deal have had a phenomenal season, and you know, everyone's so proud of what they've done. I saw that their FA Vars victors, Lincoln United's penalty luck, ran out on Saturday with a epic shootout defeat to Romford. But you know what a season they've had, Deal Town, and yeah, a blip for them on Saturday. But and you know, and I'm sure Steve King will be frustrated tonight with not holding on for those points, but they're nearly there, and they've done fantastically, haven't they?
Oh yeah, unbelievable. Again, I think we've said in the programme that keeping a solid side over the last couple of years has really helped him. I think Steve King, we've had him on numerous times on the show. I think he's what he said. The players have grown together, know what they can do. And that extra bit of team spirit of not, you know, we look at Faversham bringing in players start of the season with the big budget they have. Didn't really work for them. Just a solid side that Deal had. Structure, players that we know how Kingy works, come to the fore, and a really fine achievement for them. Interesting in how they get on next season. We've seen sides, you know, have good first seasons into the Isthmian South East. I'm sure they'll strengthen the side as well, and they'll be looking to do quite well in that, in a league we know that's very attacking wise. And I'm sure Deal will be an excellent advert for that, and really be a good addition to that division.
I think as well, like as I've always said about Deal, they've got a lot of players who have played a lot of football. Some of them have played at a higher level than they are now, and I think that's been able to be the catalyst for them doing so well now. But it is just that, you know, they will need to add in certain areas and add a bit of quality here and there. But yeah, there's no reason why they can't go on and have a good fist at it.
Yeah, I think as well. Again, will Steve King, will he be loyal to the players he's got? I'm absolutely certain he will. And maybe over the season, players will come, players will go. But I think they're going to be okay.
Absolutely. And what are Tunbridge Wells then? First time I've seen them this season under their new manager. Well, not new manager, watching the manager all season, Steve Ives. They won 5-0 on Tuesday night against Southern Athletic. Looking to finish strongly. I also spoke to their manager, Steve Ives.
I think for us, any win's a good win. Clean sheets, you're never going to turn one of those down. And it's a tight game. Like, let's be honest, it could have been a draw. It could have possibly gone either way. But today we've had our bit of luck. Trev's took his chance eventually, and delighted, really. Yeah.
Yeah, it was one of those games that Steve King just said the same thing. You know, it really could have gone either way. He thought they maybe had some of the better chances in the first half, I thought, fell to you.
Yeah. I mean, I think a neutral would probably be, we're both going to say we probably had the better chances. I felt we had, across the course of the game, probably half a dozen reasonable sights of their goal, whether we've been wasteful or the keeper's done well. So you'd like to think at least one of them is going to go in sooner or later. So, yeah, I guess the pleasing thing was they weren't able to breach us because they're lethal from set pieces, particularly. They've got a lot of goal scorers in their team, so really pleased to keep them out, to be honest.
I think when it was 0-0 with about 15, 20 minutes ago, I thought none of your chances have fallen to your main man, and then one did fall to him, and he kept his cool really well to suck it away.
He certainly did, and he was doing his bit defending in our box towards the end as well. I think he might have had what I would consider a reasonable chance first half. But yeah, you know, our finishing is a little bit wasteful. Their finishing is, it's hard because if you don't set yourself on this pitch, you know, it's a bit of a lottery. It's like a comedy golf ball, and anything can happen. So yeah.
You mentioned the pitch there. It obviously looks like an end of season pitch. We've still got a lot of games to play on it.
Have we got 8 games left now? Or 7? We've either got 8 or 7, and they're all at home other than one. So, and the 23s have still got a massive backlog of games as well. So it is just a wet pitch. It's been a particularly wet winter. The drainage is on the list of things to do to review, but yeah, there's a lot of things on that list, to be honest.
Generally speaking, how have you found your first season in charge here?
Hard, to be honest. You know, obviously the manager leaving when he did that for a reason. You know, everything wasn't completely as it needed to be. Not having a pre-season with a side's difficult. There's a few little things that aren't ideal off the pitch, but you don't want to make excuses. You just get on with it. We've kind of had to develop throughout the course of the season, and you know, I think we're 1-6 now, and we've played Whitstable, Lid, Deal, Erith, and edged us out 2-1. So we're actually in relatively good form despite our league position.
I've spoken to a couple of supporters today, and they've all said, you know, they're happy with the progress that you're making. Do you feel that what we've seen today is better than it would have been if I'd been in September?
That's a good question. I think had we had the benefit of a pre-season, we'd be 2-3 steps down the line. If all the ducks were in a row off the pitch, look, no clubhouse, you know, it's stating the obvious. It's a massive revenue stream, and it's just the boys are now dispersing, whereas you generally build that little bit of camaraderie. So it's all things that make it difficult, but I knew that was a deal. If I'm honest about it, I probably wouldn't have got offered the job if everything was perfect, because it'd have been probably a lot of higher profile. You've got to be realistic. There probably would have been a lot higher profile people throwing their hat in the ring, so opportunity knocks, and we're just about starting to give the supporters something to smile about.
You're obviously losing the revenue of the clubhouse, but it's also the same with the home fixtures and having so many left to play. You know, we've seen this with Tunbridge Wells for the last 3 or 4 years, that not playing home games for a couple of months, it's got to really affect the club, hasn't it?
Definitely. I mean, it affects the momentum on the pitch, first and foremost. It definitely affects the revenue off. And I think you look at it now, as I say, you know, we're finished on the 27th, we've still got to play at least 6 home games. Supporters, a lot of them are going to be midweek now. You're not going to get as big a turnout in a midweek as you would on a Saturday. People just can't keep affording, I guess, to come through the gate. So Yeah, not ideal, but out of our control. We always just say try and control the controllables, and that ain't one of them.
Yeah, and I suppose for you that the most important thing is what's happening on the pitch. And if you can finish the season in a good run of form, you say you've had one defeat in six, if you can keep that going to the end of the season, it gives you something to build on for next year.
It gives the fans a little bit of confidence we're moving in the right direction. It gives the players a little bit, you know, we're all going to be sitting down having our conversations within the next 3 or 4 weeks. And at least if you finish relatively strong, the boys can see what we're trying to do. And as I say, as long as a few things kind of line off the pitch, I think the majority will stay, and hopefully we put a better account of ourselves in next season.
How are things looking off the pitch? Obviously, there must be plans for doing the clubhouse and getting things back to, you know, the potential of this club. Everyone knows is huge.
Yeah, I mean, I think I saw a stat on Twitter the other day, which I assume is correct, that we've still got the third highest average attendance in the league. And when you think there's no facility, there's been times when the toilets haven't even been working. Do you know what I mean? That's testament to these people. They turn out home and away, and it really is what makes it a fantastic club to be involved with. I'm being told the clubhouse rebuild is imminent. It's a little bit above my pay grade, but you know, I just got to get through to April the 27th. Then we can all sit down and hopefully start moving in the right direction.
And that's the thing, isn't it? You know, as you say, you're much better than your league position shows, but this is a tough league, isn't it?
Yeah, it's unforgiving. And again, every week you look at the results. I think half-time, someone, not that I particularly appreciated it, but someone in the dugout had a look at their phone and they're saying, flipping it, Rust all the 4-0 up at Lid. And then I've just seen 4-all. And it's, you know, Holmesdale and Kennington drew, I think, and anyone can beat anyone, as I guess Deal have just found out. So Probably. I mean, I'm from Sussex, and compared to the Southern Counties League, this is a different animal. Do you know what I mean? I think if there's a step four and a step five, this is step 4.5 at least. So yeah.
And talking of Deal, obviously you've just beaten them, but they've been phenomenal this season, haven't they?
Nothing but respect for them. Like, to be fair, they beat us 3-0 at their place, two corners and a penalty. And I did say to the boys, they're the one side who probably have outclassed us. So it's time for us to. I've got a lot of respect for them. They had a great run in the Vars. I think Steve said before the game that was like their 50-somethingth game compared to us. So it's going to take the toll on the squad and the legs, but I genuinely hope they get over the line. Head and shoulders, the best side in the league for me.
I thought, Matt, he was very honest there about the challenges that are facing Tunbridge Wells. But if they can end with a really good run, then people will be looking at them thinking they're a club who could maybe live up to that potential next season.
Yeah, 3 wins on the spin. We always thought they would be one of the sides over the last couple of seasons who could do quite well in the division, but hasn't been. Was the was it burned down, the bar, wasn't it?
Yeah, last season, yes.
Yeah. So.
But, you know, for him to stand there and say to me, you know, look, you can see the difficulties of this because the players are going home.
Yeah.
The players should be sticking around, but they're going home now. And I think that was really quite telling, actually. And you know, fair play to Steve. He was very honest. I enjoyed the comment of, well, if the club was in a better place, they probably would have got a better manager than me. But actually, he's galvanised that team quite well. And you know, seeing them in action, they've got some players that I've seen around the county who I quite like. So I'm not overly surprised, actually, that they had it in them to beat Deal. And in Trevor McCreedy, they've got a goal scorer, and that's what everybody wants.
Well, yeah, it'd be interesting, again, what happens next season in this division as well. Again, it could be quite a wide-open division. See where it goes. Tunbridge Wells, as he said, big club because they get good crowds. So, again, if you get it right there, you can really do well. So, hopefully, off-field problems can sort themselves out and they can look forward to where it can go.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the world is their oyster because, you know, they can get the massive crowds in. You know, they're the, even though Rustle will probably argue this, they're the town's team because they are Tunbridge Wells. I think, you know, there was a good 400-odd in there on Saturday. Even when Tunbridge Wells got really nothing to play for and loads of games left to play, it's good to see that the fans are still going behind them.
Yeah, 7 games in 3 weeks. Well, on a par with Truro, and Gateshead, they'll be here as well, wouldn't it? Ridiculous amount of games. So, yeah. Again, I feel for them a little bit because arguably they're probably one of the biggest clubs in that division. So, if they can get it right, hopefully they can move in the right direction. And I'm pleased for him. He seems delighted that he's got the job. And I did think you said the line, we said if they were doing better, he probably wouldn't have got the job. But I think it's quite a nice line, that.
It really is. And a really nice guy. I said, first time I've met him, but he was very accommodating and we had a good chat as well. So nice to see him and good luck to them for the rest of the season. On Saturday, it was Beersted 4, Stansfield 0. Erith Town 2-1 winners over VC Athletic. They also won tonight, Erith Town as well, to continue their playoff push. Faversham beat Corinthian 4-0. Holmesdale 1, Hollins and Blair 1, Kennington 2, Welling Town 2, Lordswood 2, Fisher 1, Leeds Town 4, Russell 4, an incredible game that Russell were 4-0 up, but pegged back very late on to draw. He finished Punjab 0, Snodland 4. We've already heard about Tunbridge Wells 1-0 win over Deal. And Wits will beat Sutton Athletic 5-0. Back-to-back 5-0 defeats this week for Sutton Athletic. Probably not ideal. Two games on Wednesday night in that division. Leeds Town against Punjab and Rostov against Corinthian. And then on Saturday, it's Bierce against Lords with Deal against Leeds Town. Faversham against Snodland. Fisher against Punjab United. Stansfield against Wits. Sutton Athletic against Glean. BCD against Corinthian. Wellington against Holmesdale. Sunday, the Kent Senior Trophy Final at the Gallagher Stadium. Always a good event. Erith Town against Croydon. And then on Tuesday night, Bierce against Sutton Athletic, Deal Town against Punjab United. And on Wednesday, it's Snodland against Welling and Tunbridge Wells against Erith Town. And of course, Tunbridge Wells also play on Monday against Faversham. I missed that one off my list. Anyone think I've been really busy? But while we're talking about the Southern Counties East League, let's hear from our fourth and final interview this week. A couple of weeks ago, on non-league day, no less, two games in that league, one in each division, were abandoned due to player or coaching behaviour. Isolated incidents, yes, but never things we want to be reporting. At the time, we wanted to discuss it with a referee, and although we didn't manage it then, it's worth the wait to have it now. Nick Dunn is the Kent FA's referee in development lead, and I spoke to him earlier on today. Starting by asking about how rare those instances that calls and call-offs can be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen a spike in it at the moment, certainly this season more than any other season before. So it'll be wrong of us to say that there isn't an issue, but I think the most important element to it is that it is a rarity. It doesn't happen in every game, every weekend. It's just unfortunate that we kind of always seem to hear about the negative side of the game, and abandonments because of player or participant behaviour is probably one of the most frequent. There has been an increase in poor participant behaviour. That's evident in the reports that we see every week. It probably stems more so from COVID, and whilst that seems like a long time ago now, when football resumed after the break that we had, we saw a huge spike in really poor participant behaviour, and we felt that at the time it was probably because everyone was pent up, everyone was restricted, confined to their own spaces for a long, long period, and everyone was getting that frustration out. We thought that it would die down a little bit, and unfortunately, that's not necessarily been the case. So we've seen a constant and steady increase in poor participant behaviour.
It's very interesting because, you know, referees, like everybody else, want the games to be played. They want the games to be finished. So it must be a really extreme circumstance for a referee to feel that they can't carry on with the game.
Yeah, indeed. We're no different to any other participant. We have an involvement in the game because we love the sport. Just because we put on a black shirt and run around and blow a whistle a little bit doesn't mean that we should be a sitting duck for abusive tendencies. I think participants across the board need to demonstrate a bit greater self-control when they perceive decisions not to go their way. Be frustrated, yes, of course. I don't think frustration should ever be taken away from the game, but some individuals, some participants need to channel their emotions in asking better questions in better ways. It's like the old adage that you wouldn't necessarily behave in the way that some people do in the high street or at work. So why does it make it acceptable just because it's on a football pitch? Kind of from a refereeing perspective, by the nature of what we do, we're never going to get every decision right. We're human. We make mistakes in exactly the same way that managers might get their tactics wrong, or a player misplaces a pass, misses a great opportunity to score. But more often than not, we display self-restraint or composure in not making comment or not saying something about their errors. So why does it make it right to chastise match officials?
Generally speaking, is there a drop in the number of people that are wanting to become match officials at the moment?
Interestingly, no. We've seen continual increase year on year for more people wanting to become a referee, which is a really positive thing from our perspective. For the last two seasons, we've trained in or around or excess of 500 new referees each season. So we are seeing continual increase. We're at the highest number of affiliated match officials that we've ever had as a county FA. Long may that continue. We're doing a lot more work around the scenes to improve the benefits of being a referee. And I think people can see that. They can see through some of the negativity that we see on social media or in the press, because officiating offers a little bit more than just what you see at face value.
We've also seen, and you may not be able to answer this, but we've also seen a few games this season that have been called off very close to the start of the game, with both teams saying they want to play, but the referee deciding the pitch is unplayable. Is that an issue where the referee would have some sort of responsibility if someone got hurt, or that the referee's head has got to overrule hearts?
Yeah, it's a really difficult situation to be placed in the first place. If I mean, there's a lot of circumstances around a game being called off closer to the start of the game than probably at 10:30 in the morning. But the referee would have to look at the bigger picture around, yes, player safety being the number one contributor. But if there's been a deluge of rain in the previous 45 minutes, that's naturally going to have an impact. So, yeah, you have to look at the bigger picture. You kind of have to be considerate of that. Sometimes it's just really unfortunate that the games are called off that close to kick-off.
And when we look at, obviously, refereeing, the challenges that we see at the top level, are they filtering down to sort of lower levels as well? Do you think, obviously, VAR is a massive thing at the moment. Everyone's talking about that, and every decision comes under so much scrutiny at the top level. And, you know, and I see people on social media saying the Premier League referees are rubbish. Oh, the Championship referees are rubbish. Is that part of the problem at the moment, do you think, that everyone seems to think they know better?
I think the challenges that there are at the top level can be very, very different to those lower down the chain in the National League system and into the grassroots game. I think having VAR can be a help as much as a hindrance. Overall, it probably highlights the subjective nature of what we do as referees. I think it's all well and good having knowledge of the laws of the game, but sometimes it's about how we apply that knowledge and those laws on the pitch that make a real difference. So, yes, it's easy to throw mud and say that refereeing's getting worse, but actually it stresses and for me and highlights the fact that everybody has a different take on what's right or wrong, and it doesn't necessarily make it right or wrong that opinion is put forward.
I think that's the thing with VAR, isn't it? That seems to be trying to almost take that away sometimes, because you might have one referee wants it to do another way, but the VAR wants it another way. And it seems every time they go over to the screen, that's it, isn't it?
Yeah. I think there's probably more opportunity for on-field match officials to take more of an ownership around the decision-making process. You have the feel for the game. You have an understanding of why you've given things, why you've not given things. So I think there's probably more opportunity for on-field referees to take that responsibility. But if they've been called over, it's more often than not because there is a factual mistake. Hence, you see a lot of decisions being overturned. And also, the speed and the intensity of the game at that level is so, so different to what we might see on Scheffel or the County League. So when things are happening at pace, you just have to be caught in the wrong place at the wrong time with slightly a different angle than that the camera may have or the manager may have, and it just skews your perception. So it can be a really good thing to have, but at the same time, I think there's probably opportunity for on-field referees to take a bit more ownership as well.
And let's just finish with a real positive then, Nick. There's some great people involved in Kent football who are on a Saturday, a Tuesday night, or even a Thursday night at this time of the season. They're putting on their referee or their assistant referee's garb and coming out and helping us get our games on. So, you know, massive word of praise for all of those.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I said, we're in a really promising position at the moment where we're increasing our numbers, and it does give a massively different outlook on the game by being a referee. I think what is important to say is that it's not just about kind of something happening on the pitch that might be misconstrued as being incorrect. I think there are times where we as referees should take accountability of things that happen on the pitch. It's not just one way. Referees aren't untouchable from that perspective. There's a lot of money, investment, time that people give up to servicing the game from a club's perspective, from league's perspective. But ultimately, referees are no different. We give up a lot of time, a lot of commitment to ensuring that the game is serviced with a match official. We don't go out there to deliberately make things difficult, or we don't go out there to deliberately get things wrong. We go out there to make honest decisions. So we do get that those decisions might have an impact and cause some frustrations, but ultimately it's not deliberate. I think from a learning perspective, there's always opportunity for us to probably communicate a little bit more effectively, but ultimately we do go out there to have a real positive involvement and impact on a game of football.
That was kind of the insight I was after, Matt.
Yeah, interesting, very interesting perspective of a referee. The most pleasing thing is that clearly people want to be a referee despite the abuse that they do get, and his views on referees higher up the chain in the Premier League and how it all works. Interesting, really interesting chat. And I don't know what, if it's just the Kent area that's got people wanting to referee, or other counties or associations as well, but really quite interesting from a referee's perspective. So, and what he says, they just want to do a good job as well, despite the serious pressure that they sometimes get under. So, yeah, really interesting. I think Nick's refereed at a good level, hasn't he? And he's head of the refereeing, I think, association, I think he's. So, yeah, interesting viewpoints out there. And if you'd ever want to be a referee, it's a difficult job, but if you don't have a referee, you don't have football, do you?
I thought the interesting thing was that the positive is actually that he says there's actually more people than ever before wanting to do this. And I think that's a really good thing. But also the other interesting thing is, you know, we expected some bad behaviour after the pandemic, but it's still carrying on four years on. That's really enlightening.
Well, maybe that's the society we live in today, John. Hopefully the country can come out of that. So maybe it does manifest itself on the footballing pitch as well. So, and he does, again, some of the behaviour you see, you wouldn't shout at a man in the street if he brushes past you and give him abuse, but you would do on a football field. But sometimes it comes down from the top as well, isn't it? So people copy what they see on the telly. But interesting conversation about refereeing. So good to see it's in the right position. And maybe myself should probably think about what we say sometimes, but I don't think I've seen with the games I've seen this season, I don't think any referee I've thought was that, you know, was dreadful. And it is a difficult job, but I'm glad somebody's trying to do it, and interesting that people want to continue to do it.
Yeah, fascinating, actually. And you know, you have really good points about, you know, you wouldn't say that things like that to people in the street. And like what was he said, he wouldn't walk into his daughter's class and tell the teacher they've done things wrong. So why is it acceptable on a football pitch? And that's absolutely correct. You know, we should show respect. But it is all, you know, I've obviously there's been lots of games tonight. And I've just seen, I think it was Leeds against Sunderland, people saying, this is why we need VAR. All of the officials are terrible in this game. Doesn't help, you know. And the referee at that game tonight, as Nick has said there, hasn't gone out to make a bad decision. He's gone out to do his thing. And he did also say to me when we finished chatting that he wanted to mention as well, you know, that people who've never refereed don't understand what it's like to be a referee. And I think that's something we need to look at.
Absolutely, yes. Fair play to them. So, again, it's a job that I wouldn't want to do. And you have to be a certain character. But I think you could be a good one to do it. If you got it, clear play.
Let's look at the National League South in where mixed week for Dartford, who had a great win on Saturday that you saw. Haven't all to lose, but they've lost at home to Worthing tonight. And I just worry that it might be a step too far for them now, Matt.
They played quite well on Saturday. Again, haven't. I've seen them twice over a couple of weeks. They're not the greatest team in the world. It was a big result for Dartford on Saturday. And when I saw they were 1-0 up against Worthing, I thought, well, maybe they can do it. But from what I've seen of that level of football, Dartford are just nothing. They haven't got that extra little bit of quality. I would say they are, unless they can get a result against Yeovil, I thought they needed to win one of these games against Yeovil or Worthing. And then when Truro are basically out on their feet because they're playing too many games in the next week, they may have a chance. But looking at the league table now, if Eastbourne beat Truro tomorrow, that would be 4 points clear with two games to go, and Dartford have got to go to the Champions. So I think Dartford will, the key thing for them, if they can, is finish fourth from bottom and hope for the AGM Cup, which is terrible to think of. But I think we're led to believe, I don't know if this could be, but a third different person has told me Taunton will be deducted points for fielding an ineligible player. Again, it's three different people have told me this.
Taunton are below Dartford anyway.
Well, no, yeah, exactly. So if Taunton, with the three games in hand, if they're losing points, they're not going to go above them. That's what I'm saying. And somebody said that Truro as well, I don't know where Truro, if their ground's ready for next season, which I don't think it is, they could be in trouble because they've got nowhere to play. So the National League might say, sorry, you're going to get, we're going to move you out. So I think there's a long way to play. So I think from a Dartford perspective, try and finish fourth from bottom and hope the AGM Cup helps you out. But two steps to relegation, you would put Dartford, if they do go down, big favourites to come up next season. Whoever's in charge, will they stick with AD Pennock or will they go elsewhere? So, but as seasons go, shocking.
So, Maidstone will be in the playoffs. They beat Farnborough and Weymouth this week. It was Bath 1, Tunbridge Angels 1, and Dover held with the same score at Hemel Hempstead. Welling United beat Torquay 1-0. And surely the things are safe now. What a job Rod Stringer has done there. Welling are in action on Wednesday night as they travel to Hammond or Waterlooville. Three games in that division on Thursday, then on Saturday. Dover go to Hampson, Richmond. It's comfortably against Tunbridge Angels. Dartford, as Matt has said, away to Yeovil. Welling against Weymouth and Maidstone head to Truro. I don't know where that one's being played anymore, Matt. I've given up.
Well, we dig out the National League here. It's an absolute disgrace that Truro, how it's got to this. Truro playing twice in three games in 4 days. Yeovil can win the league playing against them when they played the night before. Yeovil banging on what a great season it is for them. Again, it's embarrassing, the league. If they're going to beat Truro to win the league, which they will, I'm sure, but Truro played the night before. It's just embarrassing how the league's got to this and how where they're playing. So could the league not extend the season, or are they just not willing to do it?
It's about fitting the
have some contingency,
it?
Surely. There must be. Or don't agree to... Well, I just can't get my head around what's gone on. Or you've got to have an agreement in place to stay, to play it in the same ground all year. If you can't do that, even if you're ground sharing, you've got to stay that. Keep it at that. But Truro playing at three games. I don't know why they're not playing at Plymouth anymore. Is their pitch knackered? Or just gave up there?
No, the pitch is awful there.
It just doesn't make any sense.
I find it hard to sympathise because obviously Truro won promotion last season, but they obviously haven't invested anything in a pitch or anywhere to play. So they've obviously spent money on players rather than spending it on a pitch.
I can't. They're supposed to want to be professional. I know Truro there. You should not be playing twice in 2 days, should you? At this level of football, if they want to be professionalism, the league needs to look at that. And again, Truro, they're supposed to be building a new super ground. I don't know how close it is. If it's going to be in, I honestly don't know. So they've moved out in 2021. So 3 years ago, they moved out of this stadium. Nothing seems to be going on about it. So the league needs to have a look at this as well. It's ridiculous. Yeah, ran over, but the National
League.
It's
insane. It's an awful situation.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Disappointment for Bromley in the FA Trophy on Saturday. They lost to Solihull Moors. And Ebbsfleet also lost to Solihull Moors in the league on Tuesday night. leaving them. Well, they had a good result on Saturday, didn't they? So they're sort of in a little bit of strife still. But I get the feeling they've got enough now, Matt.
Yeah, they're relying on other teams. Them losing, they probably need 2 points from their remaining three games. Again, they could be playing Halifax. Bryce knows where Halifax is going to play because their pitch is up the Swanee as well. So next week, if we get any more rain, yeah, I think you're absolutely going to be safe. Use this experience this season as a learning curve and move on next season, I think it is. And from a Bromley perspective, they've got to be careful. They should just get third, but the form's not great, Bromley, is it? So, of late. So, yeah, I think we know they got in the playoffs. I think anybody can win those playoffs in that division. Hopefully, Bromley have got enough to do it. They're going to finish third by the looks of it, so which is a great achievement. Could be playing Solihull again, could be, I suppose, couldn't it, in that position. So,
also playing on this Saturday as well, isn't it?
Are they really?
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for that. So, you know, that's quite a big game now, because Solihull could sneak into that third spot, which Bromley want to make sure they compete, because Bromley have been in the top three probably since about December. So, yeah, quite interesting. I wouldn't know who would go win those playoffs from there. Quite open. And the Football League could have a new team for a while. You going for Barnet?
I think so, yeah. I think they're in good form. They've had a brilliant season. They've got goal scorers. And I think they're a threat.
Hopefully Bromley can get to Wembley in that competition. But there's going to be plenty of twists and turns coming in that as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, FC United home to Altrincham on Saturday. And then on Tuesday night, they try to go to Halifax again. Bromley head to Oxford City. And of course, on Wednesday, it's the Kent Senior Cup final as well between Maidstone and FC United. They could have played twice in 2 days. And we discussed that one last week, didn't we, Matt?
Yeah, ridiculous.
Enough of that. Right, I am actually on the train. I have been on the train for nearly 10 minutes. I'm very aware that people are listening. So we should just wrap this one up, shall we?
Yeah, wrap it up. Nothing exciting on the telly. I did watch Scoop, so we can discuss that next week. And I watched the film with Bill Nighy about the Homeless World Cup. So my Barry Norman review of those films will be on next week's Ken Nonley podcast.
And the thing is that people will be more excited about that than they will be your coverage of Ramsgate against Cray Valley.
Should be. Again, your prediction of that, John, for last thing?
0-0.
Excellent. Look forward to that.
Well, hello there. Apologies, first of all, for the somewhat subdued ending to this week's show. I did actually get on the train, and even though I was sat on that one seat next to the toilets, a toilet door, actually, which later on would become jammed open, but that's a whole other story completely, I felt a little bit self-conscious being on the train, because I've mentioned before I don't like people talking loudly on the train, and that's exactly what was happening there. And there were lots of Arsenal fans on the way back home after the Bayern Munich game, and very few of them seemed interested in the scaffold. Who'd have thought? Anyway, I just thought I'd fill in and finish off this week's show. It's now Thursday morning, so it's more than 24 hours after we recorded the show. Firstly, apologies, there's no Scaffold Division 1 news in there. There wasn't a lot going on at the weekend, and it's pretty much the perils of me writing the script on the train on the way to work, then doing a shift, and then recording the podcast on the train home. But there you go. It's still tight there. But AFC Whitelif on the way to clinching the title there. Loads of games in that division on Wednesday night. Also on Wednesday night, there were games in the Scaffold Premier Division where the set-piece Kings, Corinthian, were 4-2 winners away to Rustall to move up to second spot, which would obviously be crucial for them in the playoffs if they can get two home ties in there. Second place, pretty coveted in that division. So Corinthian will hope to finish strongly and that they can get that second spot, as everybody will. It does pretty much look like the four playoff places are set now, even though Lidtown did win 3-0 against Punjab United also on Wednesday night to move closer to Erith Town. But I think four games to play for Lidtown, I think Erith have probably got enough in the tank there. So it looks like the playoffs are going to be between Corinthian, Glebe, Faversham and Erith Town. The order obviously yet to be determined, with Deal hopefully for them clinching the title this weekend. What else have I got to say? Not too much really. Another miserable day here in Eastbourne. It's very early on Thursday morning as I'm finishing this off for you. Hopefully you've enjoyed this week's show. Really great interviews in there. Massive thanks to all of our guests for their time. Obviously Steve King was pretty livid after that defeat on Saturday, but always great to speak to King. And Steve Ives I thought was really good as well. And another Steve Steve McKim looking ahead to the massive game on Saturday. It was almost a Steve special, but Nick Dunn, the referee bod from Kent FA, was absolutely brilliant as well. Really, really appreciate his time, and I hope that's given everybody a good insight into the life of refereeing. I am going to wrap this up now. I'm just going to say to you, don't forget you can follow us on social media, on Twitter/X. We are at Kent NL Podcast. You can find us on Facebook, search for Kent Non-League Podcast. There's also the group, the Kent Non-League Football Chat, which has been great fun this weekend if you're a regular member of that group. But I think we're through the worst of it now. And then also you can find us on Threads and Instagram at Kent Non-League Podcast. Matt's film reviews will be coming next week. I know you're all very, very excited about that because I certainly am. But more importantly, a massive weekend ahead of football. I hope everybody has enjoyed this week's show. I'm going to hand back over to me just over a day ago to wrap up the show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you everybody for listening to this week's show. We'll speak to you next week on the Kent Non-League Podcast.
That's my train impression. Any good?
Well, at least it was running, unlike some of the other ones I tried to catch.